Welcome to this session. It's a nice follow on from the plenary that I was involved with when we're, how can we design better pathways? How we can help members with the complexity and the decision making they need to make at retirement. So this is a very timely paper that Garvin So has prepared. Garvin's a data actuary at Laneway Analytics. And one of his real passions is around helping trustees, the clients of Laneway, with public policy. And he's done a lot of the modelling that some of the Laneway Analytics clients have used for their public policy statements around things like paid parental leave and things like that. So public policy, how do we make the system better, is a big passion of Garvin's. He'll present, and then there'll be time for questions and answers at the end. Over to you, Garvin.
So how many of you are coming over from the plenary this morning? Yeah? Okay. So, yeah, I have a very different view to the presenters from this morning. Default in the pension phase is, well, controversial at this point. But I hope by the end of this session that I might have managed to win some of you over. I genuinely believe that pension phase can be default, and it can work to some degree. So, yeah, without further ado, let's get started. Yeah, there you go. It's funny because I actually planned on opening my session similar to how Tim opened his. Essentially, we have an excellent, celebrated retirement system in Australia. Okay, but if we were to attribute where that success is, though, it's really just an accumulation phase right now. It's compulsion, it's default, it's very adequate because it's at 12% now coming 1 July. But it's really the retirement phase that we want to work on. The presentation from this morning focused more about creating more products, making distribution better. But actually, I see a slightly bigger issue. And to illustrate that, I would like to introduce you to Bob. Yeah, so meet Bob. Bob is an actual member that I encountered in my journey. He's an 80-year-old retiree. He's got, just over $500,000 in super. And, he retired 20 years ago, but he's never moved it from accumulation phase. It is still an accumulation account to this day. And it makes my heart bleed. Why? There's one big reason. One of them is because that investment earnings in accumulation phase is taxed at 15%, whilst in pension phase, it's tax-free. So it's approximately, 0.5% difference every single year. But compound that over 20 years, you can begin to imagine how much Bob has missed out on over here, yeah? And I very quickly realized, as I was doing more of this analysis, that there are a lot of Bobs out there. A lot. How many? According to Challenger, and this is a report they released 2 years ago, 1.3 million Australians. Yeah, that's million with an M. They really focused on this one thing, the issue about tax. But it's actually more than that. There are other issues surrounding this as well. So tax is probably one of three issues. The second issue over here is the retirement bonus. How many of you here know what a retirement bonus is? Okay, I see some hands, but a lot of hands down. So maybe I'll spend a little bit of a moment just explain what it is. When you're in accumulation phase and your money invested, you have an unrealized position with capital gains in there. With the expectation that eventually this position will be realized, the trustee puts money aside, assuming that tax needs to be paid one day. There's one circumstance where you don't have to pay that tax, and that's if you were to move that money over to pension phase through the transfer balance cap. Suddenly you no longer have to pay that tax. And that gets released back to you as a member. It's free money that's given back to you as a member. And funds call that a retirement bonus. And it can be very substantial in some instances, especially if you've been a member continuously at one fund for a very long time. Yeah. And finally, the last point is, people's super is meant to be used. So it's an additional source of retirement income for the members. It's an improvement to their standard of living in retirement. And of course, it's good for the economy as well, because Australia, as you know, is a consumption-based economy. Yeah. Right. So I thought to myself, there are 1.3 million Australians out there that are clearly eligible for all of this stuff. They just don't know that they have to claim it. Can we create a mechanism to ensure that they do not miss out on it? Yeah, that's really the focus of my talk today. It's not about creating the fanciest retirement income product for these members. It's about how can we ensure that they can cash in on this, what is essentially a free lunch. And this is where, before I move on to the next slide though, there's one word, one key word that I didn't put in here. That's default. Why do I think it needs to be a default system? It's because primarily there are 1.3 million Australians in here and they are the most disengaged members. I know that advice, education, guidance, and all of that will continue to play a role, but I do not believe that it will sufficiently move the needle on this. All right, I'm going to play a little bit of a guessing game with all of you here, putting this to a side. At a typical super fund at the moment, if you were to run a campaign telling members that there's this awesome thing that they should do and it's in their best interests, have a guess what percentage of members are likely to act on it. I'm talking about like typical conversion rates that we're experiencing right now in the industry. I'm going to start with a high number, 50%. Anyone thinks it's 50%? Okay, you guys are smarter than I think. Okay, I didn't manage to trick you. Okay, 20%. 10? 10? All right. 5, anyone? Yeah, okay. I have never seen a conversion rate of 10%. 2 to 3% is what I normally see. 5% would be excellent. 10% is practically unheard of. So let's be really optimistic here, yeah, and say we can reduce this number by 10%. You still have over 1 million members that are in that group. That's not good enough for me. I think we should do better than that. Right. So before I explain exactly what my mechanism is, I just want to keep in mind a few things. Yeah. When we're proposing a default mechanism, we need to show that it's clearly in the member's best interest. And this will apply for most of those $1.3 million members. We need to make sure that people who are worse off, we've considered all of them, their scenarios, and thought about all the different ways that we can minimize that. And finally, opt-out is important. Having an opt-out mechanism is important. So what I'm proposing is soft default, not hard default. Members should always be free to make their own decisions, even if we as trustees don't necessarily think it's the best decision for themselves. It's just the climate in Australia. Yeah, so this is what I'm proposing. If a member meets these criteria, they will be defaulted into an account-based pension product. Why an account-based pension product? Two reasons. One, it is the one product that all funds currently have. I want to make as few changes within funds as possible while letting members cash in on all of that free lunch. So I don't want there to be an argument to say, but funds don't have this product yet. This innovative income stream product that you're advocating for, it doesn't exist yet. I don't want that to be an argument. So I'm keeping that to a side now. That can be an improvement for one day if this happens as a step one. Reason number two, account-based pension is the only way I can ensure no one will be worse off. And I'll expand on that later on. So what are the criteria? Minimum balance requirement, yep. So you need a minimum balance, otherwise you're not allowed to open a pension account. That's intuitive. Second part, they do not already have a pension account, and that could be a TTR account. So basically, they haven't made a choice yet on anything. And the third one, those 2 points over there, that's just related to the condition of release under the ATO. You're not allowed to move money into pension phase until you've met one of those conditions. And I would just like to highlight this little point over here, or the member is 65 or older. A lot of members don't realize this, but you can still be working. As long as you're 65 or older, you're already allowed to move your money into account-based pension. A lot of people should be taking advantage of that. Right. So before I lose your attention, was the opportunity that I am estimating here. I estimated that with my proposal, this would immediately affect 1 million members with $400 billion of FUM between them. That translates to $2 billion in additional investment earnings every single year. All of these numbers are increasing, by the way, every single year with the silver tsunami coming our way. Yeah, retirement bonus and retirement income. Yeah, that one's every year once again. One thing to call out, these are conservative numbers. First of all, it only includes APRA-regulated funds, because that's the data that I had to create this. So public sector funds who are exempt are not included at the moment. SMSFs are not included at the moment, but SMSFs can probably do their own thing. And the other thing is, every single time I had a choice in a assumption setting between something that's a bit more conservative and something that's a bit more aggressive, I have consistently picked the most conservative option available. An example of that, the minimum account balance requirement, it can be as low as $10,000. It can be as high as $50,000 in the market at the moment. I've selected $50,000. If I lowered it to $10,000, the number of members over here would increase dramatically. Not so much the FUM, but definitely the number of members. Other thing, the retirement bonus, there are varying levels in the market at the moment. The lowest that I found is 0.5%. I found numbers as high as 1.25% though, like at funds like MLC and whatnot. So once again, I've selected the conservative number here. These are the starting from numbers. So some additional features to make this work. Maintain existing investment options. I admit this is an area that small tweaks will be required. So for example, if a fund offers Australian shares as an investment option in accumulation, they should offer it in pension phase as well. That's just an example. That is not necessarily the case at the moment. You could have different investment options in accumulation and pension phase. And also the investment mix within that investment option can be a bit different as well. So what I'm saying is, funds would need to get them quite close to one another so that really the main difference between them is just a tax issue. Yeah, and that way I can ensure that members are actually always going to be better off. Second part about insurance cover. So if they have insurance cover through accumulation phase, persist that through pension phase until they say no. I know that this is possible because there are funds that currently do this, like Telstra Super and whatnot. They continue to deduct insurance premiums from pension phase. So it's 100% doable. Right. Drawdown amount. Yes. So there is a legislated minimum drawdown rate for pension accounts. So we will need to put this in. And we'll just set it at the minimum drawdown rate for now. I'll expand on this a little bit later because there's a little gimmicky feature that I'm putting in there to combat this. Right. And finally, yes, we need to tell members and give members an opportunity to opt out. And there's a pretty successful model that we could copy for that. And that's, from Protecting Your Super. Members get a notice in the lead up to, the, transition being triggered basically. And they could opt out during that process. And you would give them information, not so detailed, but more like, oh, we are going to, if you do nothing, we're going to move your money into a tax-free investment vehicle. You no longer have to pay tax. No member is going to say no to that. We're going to give you a retirement bonus of X amount of dollars if you do nothing. No member is going to do anything about that to say no. So, yeah. And you would also give them an opportunity to provide you with their bank accounts if they want the money, essentially, from the account-based pension. I do anticipate, though, that a lot of members will not provide their bank details because they have ignored the letter or whatnot because disengagement, once again. So what I'm proposing is that we recontribute the amount that we needed to pay out to them as an after-tax contribution back to the member. This will need a little bit more explanation. Right. So I drew up a little diagram for how it would actually work. So how? So we start off in a position where we have opened up a pension account for them. Let's say it's $500,000. We need to pay $20,000 to them. instead of paying to a bank account because we don't have their bank account details, we pay it to a member's accumulation account that we open up for them. And we do this on the last day of the financial year to give them opportunity, every opportunity to give their bank details if they would like to. Come 1 July, we reboot their pension account, combining what was left in their pension account with what was in the accumulation account. And so they once again have $500,000 in the pension account in the new financial year. And we would just repeat this every single year. One thing to call out, why am I doing this? Because this is what you would do if you wanted to maximize the financial return for the member. This is actually something that members are already doing manually. I have seen members who do this every single month after they receive their pension payment. And it is absolutely them gaming the system, but it's totally within the rules. And every member should be doing this. It is a tax concession that all members are eligible for. Yeah. Feel free to question me some more on this later on, because I think this is going to be the main point of controversy. Right. So a couple of what ifs. I've thought through a number of common scenarios where members might say later on that, oh, but you know, you've done something that makes me uncomfortable later on. So one of them is, oh, I actually never wanted an account-based pension. There's no problem with that. This is why I selected an account-based pension. You can do anything with it still. You have 100% flexibility through the account-based pension product. You want to put it back into accumulation phase? You can do that. Commute it back to accumulation. You want to take it out as a lump sum withdrawal? You can do that still. It's actually better for you now because at least you've cashed in onto the retirement bonus. I've seen so many instances of people like Bob who want to take money out to, say, for example, pay down a mortgage or something like that. And they take money out directly out of accumulation. It breaks my heart because they could have first moved it into pension phase, cashed in on the retirement bonus, and then cashed out through the account-based pension product. It's completely procedural, yeah? But then they missed out on the retirement bonus that was, like I said, could be 1.25% of the entire account balance. It's devastating. And you can take the money out and buy one of those new innovative lifetime income stream products in the future when they become available. You can do that too. There's nothing stopping you from doing that. Right. Scenario number two. They're still working, or they resume working one day. No problem once again. When the new employer contribution hits the fund, you would get a new accumulation account essentially. But at least now, most of your money is in that tax-free phase of super. So you get to benefit from that. And every single year, when the account is being rebooted, once again, the combined account balance would be used to reboot your pension account. So you're maximizing on this every step of the way. Finally, there are some members who will say, oh, no, I actually never needed the money. No problem. You can manually recontribute the money back into the account if you want to. You can take the cash, put it underneath your bed. You can invest it outside of super. You can do whatever you want. But the default would be, if you don't do anything, we'll just put money back into the accumulation for you. Yeah. Right. So the numbers I showed you earlier, the headline numbers that I hope a journalist would pick up one day, is not actually the full picture. These are the actual full numbers that I've modeled and without all of the rounding. There are a few things that I like to call out. One is look at the increasing numbers of members and FUM through just the last 4 years. And that's really just from the baby boomers coming into retirement over time. And they have still not all retired yet. We have still not hit the widest part of the population pyramid yet. That's still coming our way up into retirement age. And they will blow up these numbers even more. Number two, the lost investment earnings. Once again, that's every single year. Just the last 4 years alone, it was $6.5 billion, essentially, and increasing. Yep. Yeah. And the other thing is, this is not going to be evident immediately from this table. But when I was doing my research, what I found was that there's a lot of continued disengagement. What do I mean by that? See these members who show up in FY21? 90% of them would show up again in FY22. And 90% of those would show up again in FY23. So on and so forth. If we don't do anything, they're just going to stay here in this cycle. And that's why you end up with people like Bob, who stay in accumulation for 20 years and don't know what they missed out on. Right, so here's the part where I'm going to kill the momentum a little bit. What is stopping us? I'm sure there's going to be a lot more than just these two issues. Yeah, I must admit, I have not consulted with legal professionals to complete this section. I'm actually inviting you as a profession to help me figure out what are all the possible things and spanners that could be thrown our way, and therefore what solution we can come up with to circumnavigate them. Yeah. I'll start with the simpler one first, because this might be actually be a non-issue. So the recontribution mechanism, there are two aspects to it. I don't actually know if it's possible to pay out the minimum drawdown amount as an after-tax contribution. There's nothing that says you can't, but there's nothing that explicitly says you can either. And we know that the way trustees behave, unless you get explicit guidance, trustees are going to shy away from it. For evidence of that, look no further than the quality advice review. Issue number two. I don't actually know if it's possible to open up an account-based pension account without bank details listed. Don't get me wrong, I have observed this in administration registry system, quite commonly actually, but I don't know if that's an administration error or actually intended feature. That is something that will need to be clarified. Now here comes the meatier problem, DDO. This is going to be the bigger problem. And I was so hopeful before I understood this a little bit more, because I had seen TTR accounts that automatically become account-based pension products when a member hits age 65. And that is defined nowhere else than just the PDS, and that was enough. Unfortunately, the problem is that my super products are DDO exempt, and there is no pension product that is DDO exempt at the moment. What that means is you're not allowed to move members from my super to a choice product like an account-based pension. That is the problem right now. If they are already in a choice accumulation account, you may very well be able to do this. Just put it into PDS and you can do this. But if they are in a my super product, which without a doubt, most of the 1.3 million members would be, then you can't do this. So what's the possible solution? Yes. So my thinking around this is we can give account-based pension products a similar DDO exempt status like how MySuper currently gets it under the SIST Act, a carve-out in the SIST Act. You could call it My Pension or something like that. And it's quite funny because I only realized after I named it that this is not the first time someone has proposed that. It's actually Jeremy Cooper, the architect of MySuper, who first proposed it back in 2010. So in a way, we've kind of come full circle. Yeah. I guess at the time, we didn't have the scale in retirement phase, where members haven't really, the silver tsunami hasn't really hit yet. But now that we're well and truly in it, I think it's time that we revisit it. Yeah. And before I finish off, let me come back to Bob. Bob has $570,000 today. If my proposal had existed when Bob retired, he would have $630,000 instead. That's a very, very material number for Bob. And there is a million other Bobs out there experiencing the same thing. So, yeah, I really want to make this work. So when it comes to the Q&A session and after this session, if you know some of the other things that may be troubling this proposal, or you think you're in a position to help me push this forward, please stay behind. I would love to talk to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Gavin. I've got one question that's come through. You can put them through on the app or you can go up to the microphone. Anthony, it's your question. Do you want to ask it out loud?
All right. Try this from here.
Thanks. Great, Govan. I mean, absolute major issue. When I looked at it, there are about 700,000 people over 65 who are still working.
Mm.
So they have to have accumulation accounts.
Yep.
So that's it's not 1.3 million, but I suspect that their balances are smaller than the people that have stayed on. Also, I have been speaking to some advisors, and some advisors actually recommend people leave some money in accumulation as a sort of deferred annuity because they don't want to draw down. So it's in a way of getting around the minimum. The minimum.
Yep.
I should also. So I think you've given me the mic, so now I can say my bit. I interviewed some various advisors and trustees last year, and the one response when I asked the question about the over 65s was that, yes, we started informing our members that they could transfer, and the call center told me to stop because they were inundated. So the response might be better than you think it is.
Okay.
But I mean, I think my suggestion is that actually what would make it much easier is to allow contributions into the drawdown account, which is it's possible, as you've said. So why not just permit that? That would be much make life easier.
Yeah.
And the suggestion has been made by a lot of people: make it compulsory at 65. I mean, there's no who loses.
Yeah.
Do you want to comment on that?
Yeah. I'll make a few comments first. So one at a time. Members over 65. The number that you had, 650,000, that's members still working, yeah? 700,000 still working. So my number includes those who are working and not working. Yeah, so that's why the number is higher. And also the members who are between 60 and 65 who have stopped working, I've included those as well. So that's why it adds up to a million quite quickly. Next thing, your comment about being able to contribute money into pension phase. Yes, I agree with that. But I wanted to propose as few changes as possible. Yeah. So, I mean, yes, if they were to do that, this would be much simpler. But without that, I can still make do. Yes, that's really how I'm approaching this at the moment. Yeah.
Oh, hi. My question's really easy. It's just about Bob. Do you actually know him? Like, have you met him? Or, you know?
No.
Because I was thinking if you had met him, you would have told him this. So,
I'm not a financial advisor, not allowed to.
Okay, no, so I was just thinking, why is he? I just thought maybe he hadn't listened to you, but you haven't met him. So that's all.
No.
Thanks.
He does a data point, one out of a million data points.
I think you should get your qualification and go and talk to the million people and make a lot of money giving very simple advice. But look, that was fantastic. I think your clarity dealing with the risks is brilliant and loved the presentation. Makes it look like an absolute no-brainer, which is part of what we've got to do. There's a couple of things on my mind that are more thinking about what comes next and potential unintended consequences. Let's say we get this in and all these people get defaulted. One of the problems we've got with insurance in super defaults is you ask the average person, maybe even some in the room, have you got insurance? Oh, yeah, I'm fine. I've got life insurance in super. And they have nowhere near enough for the right life insurance in super. So we may get this, oh, yeah, I've been defaulted. I'm covered. So I think I'm interested in your commentary on how do we make sure we cover the real needs, not just some really obvious basic things. The other thing is that this doesn't really address the retirement incomes covenant questions.
Yep.
So again, perhaps it's the next step, but again, if we default people into something, do they then think, oh, well, I don't need to do anything? So interested in your comments. You've clearly thought lots about this, Nick, and thanks for presenting that so clearly and well done.
Yeah, thank you. So, yeah, I do expect this to be a stepping stone for members, is that while members have not made a decision yet, this is what you're going to default into so you can at least benefit from the things that you're eligible for. Just going back a few slides, I do expect that with sufficient guidance, members will realize that they want something else other than account-based pension. I do believe that. This is not the most appropriate product for most members. Yeah. So how should I put this? As guidance continues to develop through the new legislation that is hopefully going to pass soon, and we get more retirement products out there as a selection for members, I think this default will become less appropriate for more people. But until then, where my goal is to maximize how much they have in super, this is the best idea I can come up with at the moment. Yep.
Got a question here from Daniel Levy, who's probably in the audience somewhere. Do you want to ask it yourself? Yeah.
This is a very technical, small point, but you asked for what are the complications. So looking at the recycling of the contributions back in.
Yep.
If someone's done, if I assume they're non-concessional contributions, and if they've used the bring forward provisions, yep, then there could be trouble.
Yep, yep, yep. I have thought about that as well. In most cases where the member is disengaged, they wouldn't have done that. But you're right. It is the one segment of members who would be worse off under this proposal. That being said, though, I had had a look at the numbers on how many members do max out their caps or do max out on their transfer balance cap. Out of that 1 million members that I've selected, it's approximately 0.1% of all of those. Yep. I know that there are more members than that who, as in the population, that maxes out their caps, but those members have, by and large, have made other decisions that would mean that they would never be affected by this policy. They would have had already opened up a pension account, a TTR account, they're in SMSFs, they wouldn't be affected by this. So yeah, it's just 0.1% of the population, of the affected membership that would be worse off. Yes, you wouldn't, you basically, if they've done it, then you wouldn't do it for them, essentially. Yeah. Yeah.
It's so easy and not expensive to do focus groups. So I would be really interested if you get six people in the room and film them and you have a script and it costs you maybe $10,000 and you say, okay, here's two funds. Fund A will do this to you and Fund B will leave you in peace and not do this to you. I'd be really interested to hear what your focus group will say. If the Bob and the Jennifer will say, that's great, I really want this to happen to me, or I just want to be left in peace and make my decision at my own time, which they probably never will, but they may not like the fact. So I wonder about the, I guess, game theory or supply and demand effects if some funds offer this and others leave the members in peace, but how people would react.
And given your research, have you got any thoughts on that? You don't have to answer that.
Hayes is probably better to comment on this. Come on, Hayes.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Yep. So this endowment effect of not losing what you have is really strong. So there's been so much behavior research, and there's a bit of a cleanup in the field, and the only one of the few behavior effects that stood all the validation test is this endowment effect, like not losing what you have, not wanting to give up what you think is yours. And so it's really important how this is framed. If it's something would take it away from you, or it's still yours and you still have access, so it's really important how you communicate it.
Yeah, no, that's definitely an excellent point. If this proposal gets more legs, then absolutely focus group with actual members is very important to know, to get to understand their actual views. Because right now I'm making a lot of assumptions by putting myself in their shoes. But as you know, actuaries really are not the typical demographic of members.
Thanks, Gavin. I just worry about the confusion you'll cause these members who get defaulted. I think, you know, Anthony, you were talking about people bringing up call centres, but, you know, the mistrust of banks, super funds, all of a sudden you're getting all this, you know, we've done this to you because it's for your group, but would they trust what you've done to them? I just think that with all the issues with trust happening here, and also with data hacking, they might think, well, what's going on with my fund? They're doing this to me. Is this So I think there's a lot of confusion there. I think we need to look after that as well. And the second point I want to make also is that you're forcing people to draw down, and when markets are rising, that's fine, but when they're falling, they're crystallizing any losses in the unit. So that's probably not so great a issue if the drawdowns are small, but it does have an impact.
Yep. Okay. First part of the question, complexity. Absolutely. Communication to the member will be a big part. And I think it's more about using language that members can actually understand that would allow you to build the trust there that you need. Because objectively, there is really very little for members to lose here. There's only stuff to gain, quite frankly. So when you're sending out those notices to members saying, oh, this is what we're about to do to you, there's really nothing wrong you can say there. You can just say, well, we're moving your investment in such a way that you won't attract any tax anymore. We'll save you 15% tax every single year going forward. No? Yeah. Okay. Part of me agrees with you secretly, actually, as a pessimist. But then my question is, so what? What does this mean as an outcome for the fund? Is the member going to say no as a result and opt out? I don't really see that as a likelihood. I feel like if the member doesn't understand, they're most likely going to do nothing. That's why defaults work, is members don't know and they just let the default do its thing. And so we still achieve our outcome in a way. So that's the slightly perverse part. And the second part of your question, sorry, what was it again?
It's making the drawdowns and then the markets are falling.
Yep. So if they have done absolutely nothing, then the money would be recontributed. So it never left the market in that sense. But if they have decided to take the money out, and in my paper, I do present a few different options. I have considered if we don't do recontribution, what else can we do instead? And what I show there is that objectively, recontribution delivers the best outcome for the members while keeping everything functionally still the same. It's probably a little bit too complicated for me to go into it today, understand. But if you're interested in that, yeah, it's in my paper. And also, there are other benefits to recontribution as well that I didn't go into today, such as in inheritance planning and all that stuff. And that is also in my paper. Yep.
Any other further questions? I mean, the comment about defaults are an interesting one, but the whole superannuation system is built on default.
Yep.
And it's designed for those that aren't going to make a decision for whatever reason.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds quite simple. Why isn't it being done?
I feel like we might have had suffered from bystander effect here. You know how when you kind of drive past a accident on the road or whatnot, and you just kind of assume that someone else has dialed 000, and then everyone keeps driving past? I think we're kind of in one with that scenario where, oh, this idea, yeah, it's a no-brainer. Yeah, surely someone else has figured out that it's not possible, therefore we're not going to even consider it. I feel like we're kind of fallen into that trap. So if you agree with me that this is a no-brainer, let's find a way to give this more legs. Yes.
Yeah.
I might ask a very simple question.
Yeah.
In terms of, automatic drawout, creating a new accum account, I presume that means, and then as you continue the cycle, does it mean every time you create a new accumulation account, it means a new account again, and then when you then at 30 June, at the end of that year, you recontribute, take it out and move it to pension, does it mean a new ABP as well, or is it to the old?
Yes, and this is what Anthony was saying earlier, is that you should really just allow contributions directly into pension phase so you don't have to do all of that administrative stuff. But that is all it is, administrative stuff.
Yes. However, I think we're all aware that there's a lot of administrative issues in super at the moment.
Yes.
So I think that probably will remain a big issue, and it's
yeah.
potentially will cost the super funds a lot of money to make sure it works administratively.
Yeah. I do concede this point with you. I am well aware that there is going to be some cost to having to administer this. But will it be more than $2 billion every single year? No, because when you reboot an account, the last two accounts get closed, and that's a new one. So you're paying the fees on two accounts only briefly on one day, essentially. Yes. Yes. That is the administrative burden that has been called out quite correctly.
And that's the current situation which yep. funds deal with, where people come along with money. They'll open up an account-based pension.
Yep.
And then they'll come along in 6 months' time or 12 months' time, they've got some more money they want to put in. The only option is to open up a second account. So there's been a lot of people calling out that that needs to change.
Yeah. Or roll back.
Or roll back in. But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it is a current problem as well.
Yeah. And like I said, there are people who currently do this manually all the time. Yeah. It goes to their bank account, and then they have to do a BPAY back to the fund or write a check or whatever. And then they have to tell the fund by submitting a new form to open a pension account to combine those two amounts back together. That is what currently happens.
And then they send them 300 pages of documentation.
Yes.
All right. Well, 11:50, so that's the time we're meant to be finishing, I think, yes. So thanks very much, Garvin, for that very thought-provoking presentation.